I'm happy to introduce our next speaker, Dr. Michelle Olson. She is a colorectal surgeon in practice in Urbana, Illinois, and she has the distinct honor of giving the talk on anal lotions and potions for itchy bottoms.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for the privilege of this topic. It was a lot of interesting research. I have no financial disclosures. I would like to say that every day being a colorectal surgeon is very glamorous. So what I'm really talking about today is pruritus ani, so itchy anus. There's really no area of the body that patients self-treat more than the anorectum. And the issue with pruritus is it the cause of their treatment or is it an effect of what they've been doing? And so trying to figure that out can be one of the complicated things for treating this disease. So anal pruritus is one of the most common anorectal symptoms that's going to walk into your office because most of the time the pruritus is going to be related to any of the anorectal disorders we've already heard about this morning. In a study from the 80s, which was just surveying random people, people off the street are saying that, you know, yes, up to 5% of the population will have an episode of anal pruritus within a year. So obviously this is underreported. Many people don't seek out medical attention until it's gotten to the point where it really affects their life. In general, pruritus tends to affect folks in the middle age. There is a higher male prevalence to anal pruritus, and there's literally hundreds of causes. So for us, trying to sort that out really becomes the issue. There's both primary idiopathic anal pruritus, which is thought to be related to sort of an itch, scratch, itch cycle. So as you're stimulating these unmyelinated C fibers, there's a release of more histamines and they get re-stimulated and it becomes this ongoing issue. Most of what we're gonna see, by far more common, are gonna be your secondary anal pruritus. And again, most of the secondary pruritus complaints are gonna be related to some other disorder at the anus. So these types of things can include not only just anorectal complaints, but systemic causes, inflammatory causes, infectious causes, and also neoplasia. So it is really important to try and figure out what these secondary causes are so that you can treat that and ultimately solve the patient's problem. So as with anything, evaluation starts with a thorough history. Important to look for alarm symptoms. So by alarm symptoms, I mean something that's really systemic. So unexplained weight loss, fatigue, change in bowel habits, change in the caliber of stool, something that's going to lead you to really look for and exclude a neoplastic process. But it's also helpful to really get an understanding of the patient's past medical history, whether there's been recent illnesses, STD exposure, new medications, etc. And then obviously with everything, physical examination, and that's gonna really start with a thorough inspection. At the time that you're looking, you really want to be aware of, is there something that looks suspicious or atypical? And think about whether or not you need to do a biopsy early on these patients. A lot of times you're gonna wait until the patients have failed treatment, especially if the anus looks relatively normal. It turns out that biopsying normal skin around the anus is really doesn't lead to a whole lot of help in figuring out what's going on. The Washington Hospital System has proposed this staging for anal pruritus and the changes that we see around the anus, where stage zero is really completely normal appearing skin. And stage one is red and inflamed skin, sort of the polished anus that you see in the first picture, and all the way down to stage three where the skin itself has become thickened, there's coarse ridges, you may have superficial ulcerations, and it may be wet or dry. In terms of the first thing to do when patients come in with these complaints and you've excluded other secondary processes, is really work on getting an idea of what their anal hygiene is. And most of what we can do to help patients is to have a good plan for how to improve their anal hygiene. Really trying to counsel patients to avoid spending a lot of time in the bathroom with excessive wiping. Use of wet wipes and other things can also cause more trouble. It's important to try to avoid too much moisture in the area, so sometimes topical powder, putting a cotton ball there to help absorb excess moisture, really thinking about, are they having any actual fecal seepage? Do they have a diarrheal problem that needs to be treated? Remove other offending agents. So are they using heavily perfumed soaps? Has there been a major change in detergents? Trying to cut back on everything, you know, go back to your sort of Dove soap and little topical barrier creams. Dietary modifications are popular for trying to treat idiopathic pruritus. There's really not a lot of great studies or information, and patients don't really care to do these dietary modifications because it removes most of the things that we all enjoy: caffeine, chocolate, alcohol, citrus fruits, and so it's really hard for patients to stick to that. But if you've got someone with really refractory symptoms, it is worth a try. And then overall, just really protection of the skin becomes an issue. So for most patients, reassurance and use of these conservative management ideas is going to be successful in managing the problem. But resolution can take time, and it can take multiple different treatment algorithms, and patients can get frustrated with that. So it's really important up front to manage the patient's expectations. This isn't something that's going to disappear overnight, and it is something that if it gets better, can relapse. So again, managing patients' expectations becomes important. So topical therapies. There are hundreds and hundreds of different topical therapies that are out there. They're going to include things like anesthetics and analgesics, antiseptics, astringents, protectants. You've got vasoconstrictors, the nitroglycerin, calcium channel blockers really used to treat fissures or hemorrhoids, corticosteroids, and then topical capsaicin. These preparations are going to come as lotions, as ointments, as suppositories, as wipes, and it's impossible for you as the physician to know every single thing out there that your patient might be seeing. However, all of these therapies for anorectal problems are going to be marketed to the consumer for hemorrhoid relief. There, as my mentor used to say, there's no Fisher aisle at CVS or Walgreens. It's all hemorrhoid creams. And so you've got patients that are going to buy Preparation H for pretty much everything that they may have going on. And there's really a lack of definitive information about the efficacy of really any of the proprietary medications, especially for over-the-counter medications. There is actually an abstract for a Cochrane review that was started in 2011 and still not completed or reported. So there's really a lack of evidence here. At the last Society of Colorectal Surgery meeting, this was included as part of the core subjects update, and over the last 4 years since that was done, there are less than 30 papers that have even been looked at in this. No one wants to study pruritus. It's not glamorous, and it's too wide-ranging to really get any information. So what are your patients going to do when they have a problem? They're going to do what the rest of us do and ask Dr. Google. And as you go to the computer, you can find all of these different options of what they're doing. You can find things that you can find natural remedies. You can even find things that look official from a place called the Hemorrhoid Report. And the important thing is that none of this stuff has been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. And even a website like this that promises top 10 product reviews, not a single one of their products rates less than 5 out of 10. So they all must be useful for something. So let's talk about what some of these products are. So you've got your topical anesthetics: benzocaine, dibucaine, lidocaine, pramoxine. Pramoxine is really the least toxic and the least sensitizing. You can find this in some of the prescription anal preparations that you can order. And it's really important if you're using these products. Again, they can provide limited relief to patients for brief amounts of time, but it's important that they don't actually insert these intrarectally because the absorption is much higher and you can get this systemic and toxic effects from it, using it in that manner. Your antiseptics, those are going to include your phenol, menthol, boric acid, low concentration boric acid, and antibacterial soaps. The thought is with the antiseptics is that you're really lowering the concentration of bacteria around the anus. And we all realize that scientifically, that's not what's happening. And instead, you know, you really get some contact sensitization and you can get some drying of the skin. So really these agents are probably harmless, but they're probably not helpful either. Astringents. So this is really most commonly what your patients are going to come in with, using topical witch hazel in some preparation or other. And most commonly, talking about Tux wipes or Tux pads, that's usually what patients come into my office talking about. Zinc oxide is also an astringent as well as a protectant or a calamine. You know, these agents are really designed to kind of harden the skin, manage secretions. It can decrease some minor bleeding, but there's really not a lot of great evidence to show that it's doing anything else for the patient. They do tend to have a cooling effect. Again, some of them will have a lot of alcohol in it, so it's important for patients to also be informed consumers and read labels, but if you've ever tried to read the labels on a lot of these things, it can be difficult to really determine what kind of concentrations are in there. Protectants are probably by far the most commonly what I ask patients to try, and there's any number of things, so pick your favorite. You've got things that have a calamine base, a lanolin base, zinc based, petroleum based, and I've just thrown a couple of them here. I think one of the best marketing strategies has been the interesting names of some of these. You know, your butt paste, your anti-monkey butt, at least patients get a little bit of a kick out of looking for them in the diaper rash aisle. As someone who has practiced in a rural area for most of my career, bag balm is one of the things that patients also swear by, you know, cow udder cream. So something else you can have in your armamentarium that tends to be petroleum and lanolin based. Corticosteroids. So by the time patients come to see you, they have most often been using some corticosteroids for some amount of time. Either they're using a very dilute over-the-counter preparation, or they've gotten some prescription strength hemorrhoid creams from a primary care physician. And these corticosteroids are going to be in all types of different preparations, creams, suppositories, foams, ointments. And as far as treating pruritus, we want to use the lowest possible dose and really use it in the most limited way possible. So by that, your patient should not be using this medication continuously, because usually they're using it two or three times a day, for more than 2 to 4 weeks. After that, you really can get some problems with the skin because of the chronic use. There are some patients that will benefit from a trial of a stronger steroid medication using something like betamethasone, but again, really only in a limited time frame. It's very important to counsel patients not to continue to keep using these medications for weeks and weeks. Capsaicin can also be helpful if your patients have failed all of these other methods. The study on capsaicin used a 0.006% concentration, and the thought is that it's believed to help deplete substance P. Generally, what they found in this limited study is that patients either had an immediate response or a response within 3 days, and those who didn't respond within that time frame didn't tend to respond as they followed them out over the whole 4 to 8 weeks. Burning at the site of application was the main side effect, and in some patients it decreases over time, but in some of the patients in the study was the main reason why they ended their treatment early. I could not actually find commercially available capsaicin at that concentration, so I would suspect you'll need to use your friendly neighborhood compounding pharmacy or a compounding pharmacy you could see online to try to get it to that concentration. Most of the capsaicin that you'll find over the counter is at a 0.025 or 0.01 concentration used for minor arthritis pain. So that's usually what it's marketed for, is arthritis relief. The recommendation is to begin the therapy with 3 times daily application, and then after a period of 4 to 8 weeks, patients can really go to using it on an intermittent basis for flare-up of symptoms. So it has had some efficacy, but again, very limited study. Anal tattooing is something that, as colorectal surgeons, we often talk about, but rarely do. It is something that's really limited to only refractory cases. The thought is that injection of the methylene blue mix actually destroys some of the dermal nerve endings, allowing the itch cycle to stop. And you're supposed to inject the fluid intradermally and subcutaneously. There is some variable improvement that's reported. The key is that you can also get necrosis of the perianal skin with this treatment, and then you're dealing with a big wound, which can be exceedingly problematic. the tattooing itself does fade over time and may actually need to be repeated as symptoms recur. So a few things that I want you to be able to leave here with this morning. Pruritus is a common complaint. You probably already know that because patients are walking into your office. Attention to hygiene and conservative measures should be tried. I would recommend that if you see a lot of patients for anorectal complaints, that you just develop a tip sheet right now that you can hand out to people as they leave your office. It will save you a lot of time and frustration and a lot of calls back to your nurses. Skin biopsy should be considered if you see something suspicious on the initial exam or if the symptoms are refractory to treatment, especially if there are skin changes present. There is very little data about any of the over-the-counter agents, and Americans spend more than $200 million on these things per year. So you can find just about anything, and there's really no great data. And managing patient expectations is really, at the outset of all this, making sure they understand you're going to go through different cycles of treatment, I think will also help both your frustration and the patient's. So thanks a lot for your attention.